KPCW News Time now, 8:10. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Joined in the studio now by Charlie Sturgis with Mountain Trails Foundation. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So what have we got? Tour de Suds.
You know, we got a lot of events this weekend. I think we should just maybe start off, you know, with between Bloon Fest, the half marathon in Round Valley, Tour de Suds on Sunday. We're going to have a lot of activity out there, and a bunch of it will be on the trails. But let's go with Tour de Suds first. First off, unusual as it might seem, here we are on a beautiful fall day. Normally we get, by this time, 30 or 40 pre-registrations for Tour de Suds. This year we're a little bit over 300 pre-registrations for Tour de Suds. We're a little kind of overwhelmed. So one thing we have added that is really important, we really want people to note this one, is we are going to have a packet pickup tonight from 3 to 7. So please help out by picking up your packet ahead of time. If you've signed up, pick it up.
Okay, where's that going to be?
It's going to be over at the Medical Center on Bonanza Drive. Okay, the Medical Center, as I was telling you, is Club Med, is the old Medical Center that was next to Switchback Sports and so forth. We have that space for the time being until they tear that building down. So please join us there this afternoon and pick up your packet. That way, Sunday morning, hopefully we can start right on time. And then basically, you know, Skull Candy's our sponsor. They'll be up at the top. There'll be some party and music up there. The main event, though, of course, is at the City Park again, which last year worked out beautifully. We've worked with comrades to make sure we can get food out a little faster. We had a little bit of a glitch on that last year, and I know a few people were still standing in line trying to get lunch. We apologize, but that's just sometimes it happens. So, pre-registration is still good until 11:30 tonight. Otherwise, you pay day of, and there, of course, are no guarantees that you'll get your socks if you really aren't if you're not pre-registered. There's no guarantee. We did reorder some, so hopefully we have enough for everyone that's pre-registered now.
Okay. Course is marked, ready to go?
Course is getting marked this morning, and it's ready to go. It'll be the same course as 2 years ago, basically. So last year, landowner needed us to skip coming through her property. She had some work going on. This year, she's opened it back up to us, so I believe we're going to be going right through there. And starts at 10 o'clock, hopefully back down to the city park by 12:30, and we'll be wrapping up by 3.
So, and Team Sugar will be out there with
Team Sugar is going to be out there with baked goods. So one or two other quickies. We have had some wildlife reports about wildlife acting more aggressively than normal. So, you know, this has been a significant drought year. I think it's going to go on record as the lowest water year maybe ever. So a lot of strange animal sightings, including the cougar running around my neighborhood, which is pretty unusual. I've only lived there for 23 years, and I saw one 2 years ago. But we did have a report of some moose acting super aggressively in Iron Canyon. So beware, especially with your dogs. These animals are stressed. By all means, they're trying to figure out where the water is. Getting in their way, especially in the middle of the rut and whatnot, isn't ideal. So be extra cautious. It's a little bit of a weird year.
I was on Flying Dog the other day. 3 moose, 2 deer, and about 5 elk.
Yeah.
It was like the wildlife wonderland there. Oh,
yep. I was in Old Town the other day, and I thought the moose was getting up to actually – you know, make way, and actually got up, turned around, laid back down, said, I'm not going anywhere. So we had to turn around and go back. But, it's better just not to confront them. It's great to be able to see them out there. It's definitely important that you control your dogs, and certainly beware if you have small kids with you. That's just not a good combo.
Okay. Anything else?
No, I think that covers it. We're in great fall conditions. It's a little dusty out there. It's crowded. Be careful with your speed, and just have fun.
Okay, we'll talk next week about just the condition of trails and then some of the survey results you got back from your e-bike survey.
I may not be here again next Friday. Maybe you could...
Living the life,
this is my time of year to duck out.
Okay.
So, thanks, Leslie.
Thanks. KPCW News Time now, 8:16. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, a group of residents has formed the Preserve Park City Group. It's those who support the passage of Proposition 1, the question on November's ballot asking voters whether they support the issuance of $48 million in bonds. In the studio to talk more about the group's efforts, I have Old Town resident John Stashel. Good morning.
Morning, Leslie. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. So who makes up this group?
This group is made up of THINC, which is Treasure Hill Impact Neighborhood Coalition. We've been around about 14 years, and we have over 500 members. Also, Charlie Sturgis right here, Mountain Trails Foundation, who just finished with you, Summit Land Conservancy, and Utah Open Lands.
Okay. And you guys have all kind of banded together to, what, purchase ads and
Right, yeah. So we're a coalition of nonprofits in town that have been around a long time. And we all have one mission here, and that is to save Treasure Hill and the Armstrong Snow Ranch pastures. We're working together as a group. Purchase ads, market. We're doing bond parties throughout town. We've probably done almost 10 of those so far. We have a number going forward. Coming out here and talking with you.
Yeah. So were you one of those who supported the fact that both open space purchases were lumped together in one bond?
Was I personally? Yes. Yeah. And was THINC? Yes. And throughout the Planning Commission meetings, there was a lot of public input, and it was 100% in favor of combining.
Yeah. I mean, so it's an all or nothing vote, really.
Yeah, it is. It's all or nothing. That's right.
Wow. Okay, I mean, when we talked about trying to simplify it, people said, oh, this is easier just to have it as one vote. But a lot of people were saying, well, no, it'd be, you know, I can vote yes here and no on that, or no on both or yes on both. That would have been simpler, no?
I don't know if it would have been simpler. It would have been two initiatives and two purchase contracts, and we got zero public input throughout the process for that option.
You've been a vocal opponent against the Treasure Project. Basically, I mean, if it ever did get built, it would be built in your backyard. So talk about, I mean, why others should pay for you to enjoy open space in perpetuity.
Well, first of all, there are many open space bonds that have happened. There's many purchases. First one in 1990 was the McPullen White Barn and the Osgathorpe Dairy Farm. Then Round Valley's now almost up to 2,000 acres, and that's up in Park Meadows. The rail trail is in Prospector. The Armstrong Trail and the acreage there is in Thanes. There's been a number of walkability bonds that allow all the neighborhoods to access Main Street with non-motorized options. Quarry Mountain, Gamble Oaks, the list goes on and on. These open spaces make Park City, Park City. They're why people move here and why they live here. We're one strong community. These open spaces are all over town. We haven't had this divisive discussion in the past. When a bond would come out around Round Valley or something, you didn't hear people in Old Town stand up. That's only good for Park Meadows. We're not going to vote for it. This is new, and it's a new political climate that I think our town is above.
Yeah. But again, you'll see really nice increases in your property values if that stays open. And the same for folks in Thanes. I mean, I've had a realtor tell me that, three purchases holding off until after the bond to see what the bond does.
If the implication is that we're doing this because we think it's better for our own personal real estate value, I think you missed the mark here. I think that it's way better for the town. We have to look at the impacts of Treasure. You need to look at the overall size of the project is about equivalent to 10 Park City Walmarts. You have to think of 4 to 6 years of blasting and excavation. You have to picture the canyon's base area 2 to 3 blocks from Main Street. You have to look at 8 to 12 years of building and construction. You have to look at an additional over 1,000 car trips a day to the project after it's built. And you have to look at an additional 13 to 17 million gallons of water being used that we don't have by this project if it's added to town. You can also look at the impact on skiing and on tourists. I mean, Old Town is, you know, there's a goose laid the golden egg. That's Old Town. You know, if we blow it up with this project, it's going to take away a lot of the ambiance and what separates Park City from other ski towns in the West.
Let's talk about the tax increases. I mean, we heard from Main Street business owner Mark Stemmler last night, basically telling us, you know, if this passes, he's just going to pass the cost on to us. So even though we hear things like, oh, it's being paid for by businesses and second homeowners, it's really going to be paid for by all of us through higher rents, through higher cocktails, more expensive meals, no?
Well, it was good to have Mark come up and speak. He spoke for 15 to 20 minutes last night, and he started off thanking the city council for stopping the atrocity that is the Treasure Hill project. You know, he also said that he thought over 60% of the vote will be for the project, and he's glad it's stopped. The problem is that he doesn't want to pay for it, and we all understand property rights, and the Sweeneys and Liz Rad have property rights there. Mark also brought up he thought it was a clear case of eminent domain, and we should just take the land. So that might be something you didn't hear.
No, I didn't hear the entire thing. So, again, when we talk about taxes, you know, we're going to see those go up. $800,000 value home, about $200 a year, about double for that for, you know, a business second home. Valued at this at the same price. I mean, we've got, again, $200 a year here. We've had Summit County just increase its taxes. Last year, we had a $5 million tax increase from the school district. Talk about golden eggs. Where's mine to pay for it?
I don't know. Where is your golden egg? You have a steady job here. Come on. So first of all, I want to make clear that the $194 a year is for a 15-year term. It's not forever, like raising taxes. It's a bond. Also make clear that the $800,000 is the average assessed value which your house is taxed on, not your market value. In these bond parties, people have brought their tax forms and said, how much am I going to pay? And so their house may be worth $3 million in Park Meadows, but their assessed value is only $800,000 or $1 million, and they're paying $194 to $230 a year. So that has to be clear. But I want to bring a point about this: the school bond you're bringing up. The school bond is done by the school board, not city council. And these are not mutually exclusive things. I mean, any future school bond and the open space bond are similar because they both benefit our children and ensure the future of Park City. Our children deserve both, and we can vote yes for the open space bond now, and whenever a future school bond comes out, we can vote yes for that as well.
Well, no, they just raised taxes, $5.6 million. That had nothing to do with a bond. That was just to...
I understand that.
Yeah, so we got a bond maybe in the future.
Maybe in the future.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about just the phrase we heard come up during the Bonanza Flat purchase discussions, the notion of stupid money, about how, you know, you couldn't build up there even if you wanted to. That they talked about that at Bonanza Flat, and they're like, oh, no, there's stupid money out there, and people have all kinds of money to do whatever is necessary. I mean, when you look at the Treasure Project, I mean, really, could somebody build what they intend to build?
Yeah, well, I have here a perfect visual aid that no one could see on the radio, but it is a full set of plans. That full set of plans will be brought forth to the Planning Commission on November 8th after the vote. If the vote for the bond is no, those plans will go forward. Talking about, can it be built? Will people buy it? The Sweeney family has never had the intention to build up there. Never had. So any argument the Sweeneys don't have deep enough pockets is irrelevant. They've always been planning on selling the project once they get the full approval. They don't have the conditional use permit yet, so they don't have the full approval. But if you look at Extel, which is a developer out of New York City, they bought 40 acres over by Mayflower. There's no ski runs to it. There's no lifts to it. It's 40 acres. Treasure is 123 acres. All the density from Treasure came from small 25 to 75-foot lots, way more density, ski in, ski out, walk to town. From my understanding, while it's a private sale, the Extel sale over in Mayflower without any access was well in excess of the Treasure bond amount. And in the private market, the Sweeneys feel they would make a lot more than what they're going to sell to the city for.
All right. Charlie's been sitting here quietly all this time. I mean, as a nonprofit organization, can you actually take a stand on something like this?
Well, I think as that's a great question. I hope no one out there in the legal world is listening, maybe. Yes, I guess we can in one sense. It's not necessarily a outright political position. It's just basically an initiative. You know, we, Mountain Trails and Summit Lands and so forth, definitely have a high interest in seeing lands preserved for recreational and wildlife conservation values and environment and so forth. So, but, you know, Leslie, two things I'd probably kind of piggyback on John's conversation here quickly would be, one is, you know, John just talked about a whole lot of different land purchases, and everybody at one time or another complained about the price of them. And everybody in the community, especially those who live out in Park Meadows, when you look at Round Valley, we all have walkable access. So thinking that this isn't part of your problem up in Old Town, and the Old Town residents paid for Round Valley and the barn and so forth. So I think it's fair to say that, you know, having Park Meadow residents be part of the community and support this is not unfair for Old Town. So anyhow, I think this is something that we would like to see really go through, and I think there's a lot of support for it out there in the community.
Okay. John, anything else you wanted to add?
Yeah, I would. I'd like to dispel one of the myths that you hear out there, that a no vote, why do we have to rush? Why do we have to do this right now? Why is this behind closed doors? So first of all, 32 years of public meetings is hardly a rush. All property, personnel, and litigation, final negotiations are done in closed session. That's by law. The main thing I want to say is we have to go out and vote, and we have to vote yes. A no vote does mean that this deal is dead. It absolutely means the deal is dead. No conservation, nothing. The full set of plans I have here are the starting point for the new Planning Commission meetings that'll start if the bond dies, if the bond fails. I also have here the real estate purchase agreement, which requires a fast-track Planning Commission process. So if the bond fails, there will be a maximum of 3 Planning Commission meetings, and a decision will be made by March 20th of 2019. This is the fact. This doesn't start over. We don't have another chance. You know, anyone saying that, that's wishful thinking and fake news. That's uninformed people who haven't been to the meetings. So if you care about this town, if you love this town, if you want to stay in this town, this is going to be the most important vote you ever make in Park City. We really have only one chance to keep Park City, Park City. Vote yes.
Okay. Do you guys have a website or anything people can
Yeah, thinkpc.com, Charlie.
Mountaintrails.org. Hey, Leslie, I want to make one quick correction. I hesitated on whether we can advocate for a bond, and Cheryl was listening, and she said, absolutely, we can. You know, Summit Lands, Mountain Trails doesn't have an attorney on hand, so fortunately. So anyhow, yes, I was pretty sure we could. And Mountain Trails Board is in favor of supporting this bond.
Okay, Charlie, John, thanks for your time.
Thank you very much, Leslie.
KPCW News Time now, 8:31. It's the local news hour on KPCW.
Matt here from San Francisco Design. Since the start of our business in 1990, we have been supporting KPCW. We offer home decor for Park City and Salt Lake and feature modern furnishings from around the world. Whether you're looking to furnish an entire home or just redecorating a single room, we can help with our in-house design team. Located on Bonanza Drive and on the web at sanfrandesign.com.
Well, Park City Municipal recently purchased one of the blocks of the Prospector Square condominiums. Back in May, the city notified the tenants they were going to turn those affordable units into housing for bus drivers and gave the current tenants until the end of October to move. After listening to the city staff last night and council discussed the bond to purchase Treasure Hill for $64 million and to pay a social equity convener $100,000, 64-year-old Jeff Bruninson, a tenant in the Prospector condominiums, said he felt he was running out of time and he urged the city council to make better use of taxpayers' money.
If you can afford to spend $100 million, you certainly could have afforded and can still afford to make them whole, maybe put them back, consider compensation, and abide by the promises and the rules and the preferences that for the last 10 years, all other councils wrote, put in the statute, everything that they guaranteed that these people would be safe.
Bruninson went on to criticize the city council when Mayor Andy Bierman told him to stay on topic, which was the Treasure Hill bond.
For the last 10 years, all other councils wrote, put in the statute, everything that they guaranteed that these people would be safe. I think it's a shameful thing. I think it's hateful and heartless.
Jeff, we're talking about the Treasure Hill bond, and you're
and
really
digressing.
I'm talking
about $100 million that you want to spend, and since you're bringing it up, it was you who said that I can't afford $400 in HOA. So if you can afford,
I never said
million,
any such thing, but I would like you to stay on track and talk about the Treasure Bond. You'll have an opportunity to get more public input if you'd like on other matters.
My reference to the Treasure Bond, $100 million, and you did say it, and I'll be happy to do whatever kind of lie detector test. It was a Friday after the meeting that you guys canceled.
When it was time for public comment for the social equity convener contract, Bruninson addressed council one more time, telling them the stress that he and his neighbors have been subjected to are not indicative of the council's mission for social equity.
My neighbors, you know, have suffered the most. 60-year-old ladies sick from the stress, just running back and forth to the clinic because of the situation that you put them in, myself, not good for our health. I just think that you've expanded inequality and fear, and it's only gotten worse. And I'd really like to see you save the $100,000, and maybe if you really want to do social equity, instead of talking about it and spending $100,000 on it, maybe make these people whole and use $100,000 and give it to the other 22. I don't want any, but make them whole. Compensate them for the kind of pain and suffering that you put them through.
That's Prospector condominium resident Jeff Bruninson. KPCW News Time now, 8:34. In the studio with me, Park City Council Member Lynn Werpink. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Well, let's start with that one. During the conversation for the Treasure Hill bond and then for the convener contract portion, basically accusing the council of displacing the very community the council says that it wants to serve. So what's your response to his claims?
Well, first of all, I'm glad that Jeff showed up at the council meeting because I know he's been lobbying hard in a variety of news outlets and social media and stuff like that. So I really appreciated him coming to council. So when, you know, this property was coming on the auction block and we got the ability to make a deal before it did that. And, you know, it was 23 units, 21 of which were occupied at the time. Now there are 6 units occupied. And during, you know, since May, our city housing staff has worked tirelessly to help those people relocate. There were some extreme health and safety issues in that building. The previous owner hadn't paid the HOA dues for quite some time. And so, you know, the rent, while extremely affordable, you know, wasn't even covering the HOA dues. And so, you know, it was a big issue and a lot had to be done and will have to be done to correct the issues in that building, keeping in mind that, you know, it's just a portion of the building and then there are other units in that building that are privately owned. So that was a big concern of the existing homeowners as well. And, you know, it's an interesting convergence, I think. You know, at the same time, we're asking whether or not the taxpayers want to approve this bond for open space, and we are creating this social equity convener position for the Park City Community Foundation. You know, Jeff brings up a valid point, and it's that concern, you know, that we're making sure that we're paying attention to all these various factors in the community. Well, we are indeed, you know, as we're completing affordable housing, you know, 12 units on Park Avenue and the many other projects that we have coming down the pipeline. Go ahead.
Why not put the bus drivers there, though? I mean, I guess here you had residents and an underserved community, it sounds like. I mean, living in conditions like that.
Yeah.
And now, so we've got that case, and yet the city saying you've got to leave. But then we talk about social equity on the other. I mean, what's equal? How is that?
Right. And that's exactly the question and concern I had. I mean, I was like, okay, I get that the only way that we're going to purchase this property and keep it from going to a private developer, and those people would have gotten kicked out, you can be assured, the next week after a private developer gets a hold of it, we could use transit funds to purchase that, which means that, and this was my question, you know, if there's a case of extreme hardship, can't we keep some of the units for some of the people that have been living there? And in order to use transit funds, it has to be 100% occupied by transit drivers. And, you know, that was something that was difficult for me because, you know, I believe that a lot of the people living there, I mean, while we've been able to help find them other places to live, you know, it was a great deal. You know, the city, I mean, you could look at it as the city taking care of its own employees. And, you know, in the case of Jeff, he works at Deer Valley, and we're hoping that maybe Deer Valley can help him find a place. So
they'll all be out then by the end of next month?
Well, you know, that's kind of the goal, but certainly we're going to work with them. We're not going to kick anyone out on the street.
Let's talk about the bond hearing. You heard from Main Street business owner Mark Stemler speaking for quite a bit about missed opportunities. He thinks the city should work a better deal. It's not too late, that the city's paying far too much, and that you have put it on the backs of businesses and second homeowners, making Park City even more unaffordable. Does that change your mind at all?
Well, no. And of course, now you know we're in this position where we can't advocate for the bond. We just have to give the facts. But, you know, I will say, and I heard you talking to John Staffschult, is that I would hope that, you know, business owners and those who maybe rent out their homes to, you know, to others aren't going to pass the full amount on to their renters. I mean, I would hope that this is a burden of the entire community if it goes through. And so, you know, I think when it comes down to it, you can look at, you know, a lot of people are coming up with quote unquote creative solutions that they think are better ideas. But I think over the many decades now of negotiations for that, I think that there's no one better equipped to make the decisions about it than our city attorney, Mark Harrington, assistant city attorney, Tom Daly, and, you know, the various executive staff that has worked on this for a really long time.
Yeah. You really think that's going to be the case, that nobody's going to pass those costs on to the consumer or the tenant?
Well, I mean, in the case of you know, if I had a rental in town, I have a rental outside of town. But, you know, if I did, I think it's the right thing to do to say that this is on all of us. It's, you know, absolutely, I would not pass 100% of the burden on to someone who's renting my building.
Well, you have a good heart, Lynn, but I don't know that that's the case for the rest of the businesses. Anyway, the city did award that $100,000 convener contract to the Community Foundation. You brought up the foundation in Bozeman, Montana, HRDC, I think it's known as, saying that it provides some 47 different services under this one umbrella organization. The city manager told us earlier that she doesn't want to compress any of our nonprofits. Do you see that differently at all, though?
Compressing our nonprofits. No, what I see this, and the reason that we, I think, chose this word convener, is that we have a lot of nonprofits doing a lot of great work now. And, you know, if you look at why are we calling it a convener? Why are we calling it a hub? I'm seeing that the Park City Community Foundation is bringing some of these services together, enhancing the services. And you know, maybe a good example would be something like the Solomon Fund. So we've got a philanthropist saying, you know, here's some money and I'd love to get underserved kids in sports. Well, that's great. But then we had this issue of, well, you can put the money there, but how did they get there? So we went to another service, the PC Mark, and we asked them for help in maybe solving this transportation issue. So they come on board. And then you have the issue of, oh, well, we need to get these materials home in Spanish so that it can be understood. So then we might, you know, bring in another community service or maybe the school district to see how we can help. And so that's really going to be the role. I don't really see the compression necessarily of nonprofits. I don't think we're set up that way. I think definitely they are in Bozeman and really a great example of what can be done with few resources.
Okay, and real quickly, I just wanted to mention the fact that there were some amendments proposed for our special events regulations. You did get some feedback from former SEAC Chair Sarah Klingenstein saying she liked what was happening, but we got to keep in, you know, shoulder seasons are shrinking. She also talked a little bit about losing the fee waiver may be hard for nonprofits, but glad to see that happen. Do you support that as well, even if it means perhaps the end of some important events that support nonprofits?
Well, of course, you know, we're looking at I think the fact that this year, you know, we had to extend the amount that we'll do for fee waivers for different events. And we're just giving, I think, fair warning to these events that, you know, try to make your business model or your model for the event budget measure up so that you're not going to have to depend on the city so much. So, you know, I just want to say we got some great public comment last night. And it's so interesting, the two people that served on the Special Events Advisory Committee from sort of different backgrounds and different perspectives. Penny, who owns Blind Dog, and then Sarah, who kind of represents the residents. You know, I think it's about finding common ground and saying, listen, you know, we might have a bigger threshold or tolerance for events if they really reflect who we are as a community. And I think the lodging and business community, you know, needs to understand that, but also the residents need to understand that, you know, they're in business for a reason and they're part of our community as well.
So would these changes then make the rules hard and fast, or is the council giving up its ability to do some give and take?
Well, that's a good question. Ultimately, it codifies a lot of these sort of gray areas. So it's more black and white. Ultimately, the council can sort of petition if a big event comes in, you know, like we've got the World Championships next year, you know, something like that comes in and it's very representative and a reflection of who we are as a community. And we're going to work with that. But we just want to make it so that there's just more that, you know, someone who's thinking of doing an event can look at, can say, you know, yeah, we don't fit inside those parameters. You know, we either have to change our event or, you know, take it inside perhaps in a shoulder season or during the winter so that it's not a permanent event.
Okay. I need to leave it there. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks, Leslie.
It's Park City Council Member Lynn Ware-Peek. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. It's 8:45. Well, yesterday, the Park City Community Foundation handed out thousands of dollars in community grants and honored Dr. John Hanrahan with this year's Tricia Worthington Community Service Award. In the studio with me, I have Community Foundation Programs Director Ollie Wilder, along with one of the members of the grant committee, Courtney Kaplan. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Ollie, let's start with you with the money. How much did we hand out?
Over $177,000. That was more than we've ever given out in the past.
Yeah. And with how many nonprofits in addition to KPCW did you help?
Well, we had 38 in all, including KPCW, and we might as well say right off the bat, many thanks to KPCW for what you do in terms of helping nonprofits get out in the air. And in fact, we make a grant to help support that. In fact, this year was just the second year we started issuing multi-year grants, and KPCW got one of those. So this is the first year of a three-year grant for KPCW, but 38 organizations in all.
Yeah, and that just helps those handful of organizations not have to resubmit every year for basically the same thing.
Right. We decided a couple of years ago that there were some organizations that we were so consistently supporting and that just seemed like the fabric of the community and we wanted to keep supporting them. Let's make everybody's life easier and make you not have to apply every single year and make us not have to review an application each year. We still do site visits each year, though. So we come and hang out with the folks here at KPCW and at the other organizations and say, you know, how's it going? Are things on track?
Okay, Courtney, the money comes from where?
So we raise the money from donors and we have different fund holders. And overall, this is one piece of what the Community Foundation does. Last year, we gave over $2.5 million. They're one part of our grant. So we're really excited about this part because we can sit as a committee and review all of the applications and look at what the need is in town and in this community and go through those applications as a group and decide where we can put money with each organization.
So is every nonprofit eligible for these awards?
All nonprofits that are doing work in our community are eligible. It's an open application process, and then each member of the grants committee reviews those applications, and we get in a room and talk through it.
Yeah, well, let's talk. How what do you look at as a member of the grants committee?
It's really about the impact that each organization is making within the community, and you know how we feel like needs can be met within our community. We want to. You know, in this particular process, we want to affect a lot of nonprofits here and affect a lot of the community.
Okay. And again, we just kind of start all over next year?
Absolutely. I mean, this year we had 49 applicants, and actually 38 of those got grants. So the odds ain't bad. And, you know, we hope we have at least as many applicants again next year. We also hope to be able to increase the amount we give. This year we only really had a core budget of $120,000 for this grant program. And we started last year inviting our donor-advised fund holders and a few other donors to consider coming in with us on some of these grants. And they basically help us make bigger grants than we otherwise could. And that's where another $57,000 came from this year so that we were able to give away $177,000. So we'd love next year to both increase our core budget and see if we can invite a few more people to help us make these grants even bigger.
Okay. Well, congratulations also to Dr. John Hanrahan. He couldn't be with us, I guess, on an airplane. Can you tell us about him and why he was chosen for this Tricia Worthington Community Service Award?
This award was created in honor of Tricia Worthington, who was the founding executive director of Park City Community Foundation. And she was just so inspiring to so many people that now each year we give out an award to someone who really symbolizes that sense of community service. John Hanrahan is the founder, one of the founders of People's Health Clinic and the Hope Alliance, and he's been on boards of so many different organizations, and he's very active in Rotary to the point where he's now the district governor-elect. He's about to, you know, be responsible for the entire state of Utah as far as Rotary goes. And it's interesting, he's a kind of an unsung hero. People, you know, we looked around and we realized he really hasn't been recognized as he should for this incredible work that he's done. And the nonprofits that he's founded are really critical to this community and to some others. The People's Health Clinic, where he's now still the medical director there, provides health care for the uninsured. And there are a lot of people in this community that would not be getting health care were it not for the People's Health Clinic. So he just stood out. He was, you know, as somebody that really is worthy of recognition.
All right. So the award goes to somebody just for their volunteer community efforts?
Not necessarily. I mean, we discussed whether this award should only be for volunteers. But in this case, this is a good example of somebody who both does professional good, but also has done a ton of volunteer good. And we felt like we don't need to just separate out somebody for only their volunteer activity. So it's more like their entire body of work, I guess.
Okay. And again, that next year, those people can apply or send applications. Nominations?
In this case, it's nominations. And we usually receive those. I think we receive those during the month of July or August. And so it's in the summer. And then our grants, this same grants committee actually makes that selection as well.
Okay. Anything else you want to add?
Wouldn't mind saying, well, if people want to learn more, they can go to parkcitycf.org. And we're just really proud of this as a program that supports so many of the local nonprofits and that reminds us all how important the work is that they do.
Okay. Ollie, yeah. Courtney?
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
It's 8:54 now. Good morning. Well, anonymous donor who founded the Pineapple Fund has donated $1 million to Nuzzles & Co., the nonprofit cat and dog rescue and adoption organization. In the studio with details about how they will spend that money, I have the president of Nuzzles & Co., Kathleen Warren. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So this donation made anonymously from the founder of the Pineapple Fund. What do you know about that?
Well, we don't know a whole lot other than the anonymous donor goes by the name Pine. He or she has a fund of about $86 million in Bitcoin that he or she decided to give away to worthy causes, innovative nonprofits, and people across the world who were making a difference.
So you're getting the money in digital currency. Have you figured that part out? I mean, $1 million in Bitcoin today could be more or less, given on the exchange rate, right?
Sure. And when we first heard about it, we had to learn about it. But it actually, digital currency is, there's a lot out there, and there's a lot to be gained by, you know, nonprofits accepting it. So we looked into it, made sure we set up an exchange, and it just gets exchanged into U.S. dollars and then can be deposited into your bank.
Okay. Has that been done yet?
Yes, it has.
Okay. And so you got $1 million. You didn't get less or more depending on that exchange rate.
No, that's right. Yep. As soon as we received the funds, we converted them and deposited them.
Yeah. Now, did you have to apply for a grant, or were you just, he or she found you?
Well, what happened was we had heard some buzz and read a few articles about the Pineapple Fund and this donor that was looking at giving away $86 million. And we said, you know, we dream big. We're audacious. Let's let him or her know what we are doing here in Park City for our community in the state of Utah and on the Native American reservations, and what our, you know, dream is to end the killing of cats and dogs in Utah and then across the United States. And so we just basically applied and sent off a description and of what we do. And we heard back, and we were the only animal organization of all of the groups that received money. There were over 60 worldwide. We're the only nonprofit in Utah and the only animal organization. But I was astounded to find out that we were one of about 10,000 applications out there.
Wow, that's awesome. So how are you going to use the money? Are you going to form an endowment?
Well, we have our beautiful ranch, which is in Browns Canyon. It's a 16,000 square foot facility, sits on 100 acres, so there's lots of room for the cats and dogs. That, through the support of our community and an audacious board back in the early 2000s, was built with the dream of having a very nice home away from home for the animals. And it also includes a medical suite, which we've now got up and running with state-of-the-art equipment and full-time veterinarian staff. But we've been carrying the mortgage on that to the tune of about $1 million. So that's what we asked for the funds for, so that we could pay off the mortgage, own the land, own the ranch, our animals now, the place that we house them and keep them and provide them with love and food and medical care is now part of Nuzzles & Co. We own it, and it is paid off. So we use the money to pay off the ranch.
So any future donations, would maybe you'd try and work towards building some kind of endowment?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, animal rescue is very expensive. Most of the animals that we rescue require some kind of medical treatment, more so than others. Sometimes they need some socialization. And, you know, our adoption fees just don't even come close to covering the care of the animal. That's what we do. That's what we're in it for. But now donations that come to Nuzzles & Co. can go directly to caring for the animals. Their housing is now paid for and safe. And, of course, we're a no-kill facility, and we don't have due-out dates. So when we rescue an animal, they're with us until we find them a home. And sometimes that can be a long time. So we just rest much easier at night now, just knowing that that beautiful place is secure and will never go anywhere.
Awesome. Okay, anything else you want to tell us?
Well, we're just really grateful to the community for all of the support and help that they've given Nuzzles & Co. over the years. You know, it was founded in 1990 by some dedicated volunteers, and it's gone through various changes. But, you know, without the support of this community and the donors who provide volunteer board service and donations to us, we just wouldn't be here. And so, you know, we're just grateful, and we are really grateful to now be able to move forward and dream even bigger.
Great. Again, congratulations, Kathleen. Thanks for coming
in. Thank you.